This is the seventh interview with Sarah Rosner on June 12, 1973, in her home. Today, Sarah was feeling better than she had been in the previous interview, and we did go into more detail in several areas. The interview opened with comments on various papers that she had gathered together for me, and some material on Brookwood College that I'd asked about last time. She also talked at length about her state of mind and how she'd always had a facade of calm, never showing her fears, her anxieties, or telling people about her personal problems. I asked about birth control, and this led us into a lengthy discussion, often with digressions, about the relationship to her mother, about her hysterectomy in 1927. It's interesting that this is the very first time that she has been willing to discuss anything that she considered to be a personal matter and not directly related to the role of women in the union. Usually, as we would approach material like this, she would immediately get off of it by saying that's personal and doesn't have to do with what we're talking about. After that discussion, which is most of tape side A, we then go into discussion of the Women's Bureau and what transpired with it. Material on Dorothy Belanca, on Bessie Hillman's attitude towards the Bureau, and the fact that the Bureau never materialized.
I still put down what impressed me. I got it on the table, though. It was in after I left in 28. I graduated in 26, and this whole thing happened. I didn't realize I was so taken up with my own problems, my personal problems, family problems. I gotta show you just one thing, how I wanted to go to Brookwood, and the few days before I was getting ready to go to Brookwood, what I had to contend with. I've got this in a little notebook, it's right on the table, if you want to pick it up. It's a little black book, and it's scribbled, no, in the kitchen. It's a little notebook, a little tiny black notebook. No. Yeah. Can I get up with this?
Yeah, I'll take it off.
I just want to show you. It's legible. It depends, because I'll read it to you anyways. You see, it's pretty legible.
This is legible,
somewhat or not. It depends the way. If I was upset, it didn't work. It's Thursday night, 1924, September the 4th. I have a great number of records to make. Well, what kind of record? You see, I want to, the best way of expressing myself at the time. But how can I do it? I'm not preparing to leave home. I'm not preparing to leave home unless to work too. I'm my old age. This is my old age, I was 32. I'm going to go to Brookwood. Now, analyzing the Now imagine the excitement all around me, in particular at the home. For the last 16 years, I have always been the provider of the home. And now, alas, such a burden upon them all. consider, just consider, eight beside myself, and the burden was all on me. I was just interrupted by a telephone call from my friend, Yera, and this in itself, on this woman, Yera, see that, remember I showed you the picture of a doctor from Chicago, that's his mother.
Oh, that's the mother.
And that alone, I can give you two chapters to write about. Because she was so attached to me, she attempted suicide in her personal life, but you read the letter that I sent to, remember. So you know who it is, see how that ties in. It ties in with all way through. I was just interrupted by my friend Yera. He had made arrangement to go to see Blossom Time Saturday afternoon. Well, to continue, I'm sure that my folks will not have to die. I know. But it gives you an idea of what my thoughts were, and how my life. Outwardly, I was a happy person. I was never satisfied with what I've accomplished. I always felt I didn't do enough. Until this day, I still feel that I should have done more of this, more of that. But in the main, I never allowed myself to be sour or being amongst people, I never showed any, what should I call it? I never made myself obnoxious, in other words. I was a lively sort. In school, they called me Smiling Jimmy. But they never knew my inside. They never knew my personal life. I never talked about it. In fact, I recall my older sisters, amongst nine children, I remained the only one single. And they were all talking, Sarah's a virgin. And I listened. There was nobody. There was only one person that I... Once I related my feeling that I... And I was innocent up to... I started out in life also because I feel, what the hell, I'm going through life being... I just... First of all, I was taken up with work, trying to make ends meet in the house. And then I was too tired for, I had a desire. I couldn't write, but I could read. I was fortunate in one thing that I learned to read in early days. Oh, I think you can, when I say I don't want to talk too much because I get hoarse.
Well, Sarah, that brings up something I wanted to ask you about. I've been trying to find out more about how much women in those days knew about birth control.
In those days...
Did you have any knowledge about birth control?
No, I heard of singing, they were talking about it. I tell you, I went to Emma Goldman's lectures and I heard about it. I was for birth control, yes, but I was against abortion. I'm still against abortion because it's the human body that I may be wrong, unless it's an emergency. Of course, I'm no judge on that. I was never cut by it.
Did you ever use anything, though? Or you were just
That was also part of my life. I have a pretty good record of that myself. I mean, I made note of it. But this was in 1927. I didn't know. I was still at school. And I was bleeding. I didn't know what it was. My heart was past 30. I didn't know when I was menstruating or not. and I suffered headaches. He said, "Get terrible headaches." I thought they were migraine headaches. I was a big eater and a drinker. I used to drink. I never drank to make a fool of myself. At least I thought I always had presence of mind. And I scribbled. And you could see the writing. I can show you that too. I was conscious of the fact that I'm doing it. Why I was doing it, you see, I gave it up. It's 5 years since I touched it, but it never bothered me. I can very well do without it. Just as soon as I had a fight on my hand, I had to put up a fight with John Bork, make a desperate effort to gain my point. I would take a couple of, go and have a couple of corned beef sandwiches and a couple of glasses of beer, nothing stronger. But it did brace me up. I know that there are great men and women that resorted to that. I don't approve of it. My own father, who was a very learned man, the only time he was drunk was Purim.
And Pesach, probably.
Not Pesach, no. Simchas Torah. That's allowed. I know that I used to take him over, pick the stones out of his way so he shouldn't get hurt. He was drunk. I mean, drunk, I mean. Because that's allowed according to the scripture. But I was never that drunk. Only once when I promised that I would get drunk. I like to keep my promise.
So you thought that this hemorrhaging was related to the drinking at first?
No. I don't. No, I it wasn't that at all. I know it. So I was, got sick while I was at school. And I went to the doctor. I think what was brought around was my mother's passing. I was very close with my mother. She was more than a mother to me. She was a friend. She, I admired my father, but I loved my mother. If you know what that is. You see, my love affairs, my love affairs were not very compensating. I never found the one that there was only one man that I loved. It was more than my imagination. Because I learned that although at the age of 80, I still dream this man. So you could imagine that it was all in the mind. But I loved my mother, and all my affection was centered more around her. And when she passed away, and I know she was dying, I left her. I got that down. And I was in Washington. She died. But I got that down. I knew she was dying. But I came home. There were seven of them in the city of Chicago. And my best friend wrote to me, "If you want to see your mother alive," I said, "If I can do anything, I'll come. If not, what's the use?" But you see, the emotions got the best of me. Logically, I figured out it's because I knew I had done that in during the war when I told you that I went to Youngstown, Ohio, and I came and I took it to the doctor. There were seven of them there, put out me. And they waited for me to come and take it to the doctor to find out that she had diabetes. She had diabetes. I came. I had no money to speak of. I had enough money to carry me through. But I made a loan of $1,000 in the family. I took the best doctor available. And he told me, even if she survives, she'll be a vegetable. see, reason, logic, I forget the word. I love her, so for 3 days they wouldn't let me. The doctor said it's no use. If she's conscious, and the way I was described to him by the family, what I meant to my mother, that she would fall, she would have a relapse, that the shock would kill her altogether. So they wouldn't let me in.
So you went back from Washington?
No, I came back from Brooklyn. So, no, I didn't come home to her funeral. That wouldn't make me, because I couldn't bring her back to life. But when I was told that if I want to see her alive, when she died, I didn't care. I gave up. So, I took a day nurse and night nurse, and after 3 days I came in and I took her hand, and she squeezed my hand, and she said, "Ahema, ahema." She wanted to go home. There was no home anymore. My father stayed with another sister, whatever it was. Two of my sisters, they were very religious. They wouldn't say religious. This is what I don't want to talk again, because I love my family. I'm very clannish. Notwithstanding my philosophy in life, I'm terribly clannish. I love my family. I love every one of them. And I mean sincerely, I give them everything that I have. I gave them everything. They wouldn't. She wanted to come home, so as I said, the three of us, we were like different world. The three of us. So this sister lived in Oak Park, in Chicago, suburb of Chicago. You know where it is. Others lived in the city. They wouldn't ride on Shabbos. So I took the ambulance with a doctor and a nurse. I used to take my I used to take it to the opera. She loved music. She loved the finer things in life. We were poor, but we had feelings for a good thing. She did. I suppose I inherited some of it rubbed off. Only I didn't have the opportunity that they had. They were rich, and when I was born, I had no bread anymore. So I was singing the air from Pearl Fish, and she helped me. So she was conscious in a way. But when after I talked to the doctor, I said, "What's the use? I can't do any more." I stayed home. And I know that there is no use, so I ate and drank. And I went up to 215 pounds. You know, I let go entirely. And I know the. So in the midst of it, I went to Washington. But you see, my mind was on her. I knew she was dying. Well,
how long did you stay home then?
I stayed home for about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
So when you went back to Washington, you started hemorrhaging, or was that later even?
After my mother died. Yeah, after I was in Washington. After I came back from Washington. After my mother died, you see, I was drunk. I was strong in mind. I suppose that carried me to... Life was always a mystery to me. And I suppose it is to good many people. What is it all about? Is it worth? What am I doing here? Or what is somebody else doing? it's such a question that, and it haunted me all through my life since I was. And I was a nonconformist, I think, since I was able to think, or not even to think, I didn't know what it was all about. Am I getting you off your track?
No, because the woman wouldn't know what it was all about. Very often they did hysterectomies without anyone even knowing what was happening.
Well, nobody, you see, even that, when I had a hysterectomy, this was very funny, I was working. When I was in Brookwood, and they told me to come home, my home was in Chicago, I left at all. They told me that I needed an operation.
You saw the doctor
in New York.
Oh.
And I didn't want to come home, I wanted to finish. To me, those 2 years meant enough. You'll find it in my scribbling all over. It was, those 2 years were really the best that I could say in my life, that I valued. To say that I enjoyed all that I, it was the most interesting 2 years of my life. It gave me something. It took away material things from me. It took away my political career in the Union, as you'll come across in many of the... because Sarah is not interested in us. She wants to go back to college, you see. They used that against me. Instead of... And I went there for the purpose of equipping myself so that I can serve them better. Instead, they interpreted it the other way around. But that didn't bother me. I knew that I went there for a purpose. I wanted to finish. It came to pass after my mother passed away that it became very difficult, and I fought it.
Were you in pain too, sir? Were you in pain? As well?
Oh, yes, I was in pain. I didn't know, I didn't know whether I was masturbating or not. And, so, then they told me to go on a strict diet. Meantime, they told me to go on a strict diet if I don't go immediately for an operation. Mind you, in that school, even there, some kind of jealousy because I wasn't allowed to eat bread. I ate onions and cabbage without salt. I lost quite a few pounds. I came down. But anyways, I went in to see Calhoun and A.J. Musty. I told him my situation. I told him what it was. And I know. I attribute it to my mother's passing. And they talked me out. I shouldn't pay no attention. I should just calm myself. And I stood it all. I finished. I came back. I went to work. Went back to the shop.
Did you stop bleeding then?
No. I felt better. In the meantime, there was a strange sort of love affair. Very innocent. I was still an angel at that age. I was working in a place, a hatchet from the market. I don't want to go into all of that because I'll give you all this if you go into details, if you want to compile and make something out of this, compile it into book worthwhile. So I don't want to give you all the details, just give you the highlights of it. So I came back to work and worked for a manager in Rochester, Mark, but I was instrumental in helping him get a promotion. That's how he became superintendent of one factory. How was that? Because after I was business agent, you know, this one didn't want me and that one didn't want me. They were afraid of me. Well, in their way they had a right to, because I was critical. I was critical and I was observant. I wasn't, even when they didn't have a union, I wouldn't allow them to step on. As I pointed out, there was one, a Swedish manager in Hartsfield Marks in 1909, who listened to me. Then the foreman wanted to grab me here, and I complained to him. And then he told me because I didn't let him, I'm fired. He was fired. I mean, he was a decent, there was decent people even then. So the point I'm making, even before we had a union, I didn't let anybody step on me. So this man came in. The production, doing shop chair lately, I helped them to the extent that the production went up 20% and cost went down. See, it's hard to explain, but I will try to explain it to you. The improvement, the cost they call bushling. You know what bushling is? But the people do the thing the wrong way, and then they have to fix it. That costs money. I brought that down by just talking to the people, telling them if the cost goes up, our wages will go down. Because of I used logic. I didn't, so he appreciated it, and it was known throughout the company. So when this happened, I went to the doctor here. I went to three doctors, and they all told me that I had cancer.
Of the uterus?
Yeah. They didn't tell me. I didn't know what uterus meant. See, I didn't know. No, my body is all I do today. I doubled in everything since then. I was as ignorant on those things as I'm not much better today. What I lack, you can still write a book about. But I know a little bit more anyways. So three of them told me. So I called up this manager, superintendent, and I told him to get somebody on my job. And he wanted to know. I said, I'm through working. And I decided, I wanted to make an end to it. If it's cancer, I didn't want to be bothered. In those days, in the 30s, this was in 27. Cancer, you know it was the end. And I was liberated enough to know that I didn't want to suffer. And I didn't tell anybody in the family. The only one I told it to was my best girlfriend. And when I said to her, before I do that, I didn't tell her what I intended to do. I'm going to go to Rochester, New York. And if they verify it, then I got time. This superintendent says to me, he insisted that I come down to see him. And every factory had a hospital, a nurse. And this nurse, I could here in front of me. They made up among themselves. I could, in hindsight, you can judge. I didn't know then, but I know now. She called me and she says, "Sir, you're an intelligent girl. But you want to go to Rochester?" Well, of course, I told him I was going to Rochester. "We have as good doctors here as anywhere in the world." He says, "You go there and you'll be all right." Well, I let him talk to me. After all, I wasn't anxious to die. I was, you know. And I come there and he says to me, "Miss Rosner, I know what you're thinking of." Well, all of a sudden he's a man, you know, I think back how smart he was. He says, "No one has answered than I have." I says, "Well, what's wrong with me? Why do I bleed?" And I have no strength in my hand. I was losing strength. He said, "You have a tipped wound." And I know, I took my sisters to the doctor. That in itself, I can write a book about my sister, what I went through with her. She had 5 children and a husband, a drunk. In the family. One in the family. And she has beautiful children. The children are beautiful. It's remarkable how on a thorn there are roses, real roses. So I saw the inside they operated on, and I was there through the whole thing. She had miscarriages, and I suppose that's why I was still opposed to abortion. She did it herself, and she messed herself up. What? I says, "Well, if I have a tip wound, what is my hurry?" He told me to come to the hospital right away. So you know, smart cop. I said, "If it's a tip wound, what's my rush?" I says, "I can't come to the hospital right away. I have business to attend. Fail Chazak, you know, terrible. I have very important business to attend." He said, "Well, I'll give you some pills. And if you don't stop bleeding, you come to the hospital with a throat like a 1 o'clock. You know, I think back, I can just laugh. And it's remarkable how it turned out. So, are you interested in this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm very interested in that, because I've got to turn to something on the whole health thing of women.
So, it didn't stop bleeding. I didn't tell anybody. And I lived with my girlfriend at the time. And my brother, who was in the only one that was left, my only brother, he's 83, just stopped him Sunday. He came over to see me on Sunday. Saturday I went to the beauty parlor, had my nail polished, my hair fixed, my face cleaned up. He came over with his wife. We were playing cards. He said, "Sarah, you never looked more beautiful. You look so nice." I said, "I feel fine." In the evening I went to the opera with my friend. And Monday was Christmas, and before Christmas, 27th, and my sister's husband, her first husband, who's a cousin also, was, you know, draw her blood. We didn't mix. The Yekos, you know what the Yekos is? No. The elite was family, it stinks. I mean, all right, so I was the outcast. Her husband, a dollar, meant an awful lot. But when it came to the family, and to me especially, they all had the whole family, they had a warm feeling for me. Nothing else. I says to him, "Harry, you take me to the hospital, I'm going for observation." And he says, "Sarah," he says, "get the best." For coming from him, it was, all right. To cut the long story short, because really, after all, to tell it as it is, when it came to it, my girlfriend was there at 6 o'clock, and I was never a good sleeper. I was always a poor sleeper. All of a sudden, I fell asleep. I was sleeping, they woke me up the night before. And when I woke up, my cousin, my friend, my girlfriend, cousin don't mean anything, but she's a friend. And she was there. I said, "Sir, listen, you let me know what it is." And to the doctor, I said, "Listen, doctor, if it isn't what you told me it isn't, you give me the black bottle because I don't want to suffer. I don't." He says, "In 6 weeks, you'll be back at work." I wasn't back at work, but I was all right. I came to the door, but I'll never be the same. I was so hurt. I cried so. I never cried. I felt very bad. Because, all right, I went through the period. I was about 19, 20, that I wanted a eugenic baby. Remember I told you then? Well, I've gotten over that because I began to reckon with the system, with everything, by another slave in the soul. But still, and I didn't know. And she didn't tell me. You know, when I was there about 3 weeks, I says to the intern, "Funny, I didn't come around yet." He says, "It takes a long time." It takes a long time. And I went to this sister of mine that I'm telling you, her husband was a drunk. He was a nice man, but he was a drunk. She left. She was the only one that was entirely illiterate. There was also a reason. She left. Anyways, I went to the doctor after 6 weeks, and I was going to sue him because he told me there was nothing wrong with me with a tipped wound, and he was the best in this line. He was noted all over the country, Dr. Percy Nelson, and very noted surgeon. I said, "What did you do? You deprived this country of good soldiers." I didn't want any children, but I didn't want them. I asked him how it would affect me in my marriage if I ever get married. He will make the best wife in the world. So, well, that's it. But I never felt the same. I suffered quite a bit after.
In terms, psychologically or physically?
Both. I feel better now, physically, than I did 10 years after I was operated. Even when I came out here in 1938, that was quite a few years after, 10 years after, 12 years after.
Why do you think that was, sir?
Well, I don't know what it was. I don't know. See, I had a combination. My lungs were never clear. My chest was never clear. And I didn't. Now work hard. He used very good psychology, Dr. Percy. It would be to work hard, and my God, if anybody did right, I worked, and I didn't want my mother to do any work, but she wasn't a strong woman. She was never too strong. She got married when she was 15, and at 17, when she didn't have a baby, and they started to talk about her. She wouldn't have any children, you know. She was very open. She talked to me. She related to me all her. My father wasn't. He loved her. He was very jealous of her. So that's that. That's one phase of my life.
Sir, you went for almost a year bleeding then? Until you were finally operated on?
Yeah. More than a year.
And would you bleed every day?
Yes. I'd spot, sometimes I'd hemorrhage. And I went with Hilda, my girlfriend. Used to play cards. We used to go in from Brooklyn to New York to her friends. And I was sitting on a chair and full of blood. Well, I don't know. It's a strange thing. I'm past 80. How in the hell I've done it, I don't know. Because I keep on, if you look up, how long will I go on? No, I'm still going. And there are days. Honestly, there are days I feel that I could put in a good day's work. And of course, there are off days. Not today. Today I feel pretty good. You're lucky.
Well, sir, when you went to the doctor in New York, was that the first time you had a gynecological examination? Or had you had them before?
No, that was the first time. Oh, I had other examinations, but not there. Never an internal examination.
Were you frightened of it?
No, that wasn't my line at all. I was never afraid. No, when they took me down, I was singing. No, I wasn't afraid of that. That doesn't faze me. Not today either. I'm here.
Well, what did they finally decide was the matter?
The tumor on my... they cut out my... whatever they call it, they... I never learned what they didn't take out. I never know, really. I know that I can't have their children. The uterus... whatever you call the other
the ovaries?
The ovaries. One ovary. If you have one ovary, you can have children. They remove the ovary. I didn't know, but I threatened to... He said, what did you want me to do? Wake you up and tell you that either you... It was cancerous, but they call it a benign tumor. It was when I... It's so funny. How can I know? How can anybody know? For 3 days, they didn't know whether I was to come to. But my sister came to see me, the one that lives in Sherman Oaks. Because they didn't know. I figured, if I live, all right. If I didn't got time, why should I worry them before? And I... You see, I'm not the type of person would like to impose or make somebody unhappy if I can avoid it. Quite the contrary, if I can give them some happiness or relieve them, alleviate some of their problems, help them in some ways, I'll do it, but not to add. But she came to see me like in a dream. She told me that she was holding my hand, and I imagine she's at the other end of the room. And I didn't want any sympathy. See, I'm mean, mean, mean. I hated sympathy. I don't want any sympathy. I don't. And that's not true. Everybody wants to be loved in some way, But not that kind of sympathy. Then I had it. See, my mother was gone, and my father went from pillar to post. You don't want me to go. You don't want to talk about the woman. I'll tell you more about this one. It's really... I even got a name for it. The Nonconformist Shop Girl. That's right. That's what I am.